right, hello and welcome back to the OmniTalk Fast Five. It's another fabulous edition here. It's Friday, January 25th. And of course, as always, I am joined by Ann Mazinga and Carter Jensen. And we're all reuniting after one heck of a frenetic week last week in New York for NRF's Big Show 2019. How are you guys doing today?
Good. I mean, I love New York. I thought it was a ton of fun. I took a little bit of a different track than you two, but I think it was good. We got a diversity of perspectives while in Manhattan. So it was a great week.
Yeah, it was fun. There was so much going on. So much. I would have loved to see more stores while we were there. But next time, we'll be back.
Absolutely. Carter, what was keeping you busy out there?
Yeah, so I did the PSFK New York Retail Innovation Week along with the Future of Retail Conference, and I thought it was amazing. It was a mix of panels and store tours, and then, of course, their kind of big keynote festival, I guess that's the right word for it, but on a morning. It was short and sweet, but it was one of the best conferences I've been to, so I can speak nothing but high praises for them to put it on, and more for the, you know, 15-20 amazing brands that were there representing. Such, you know, power, you know, amazing keynotes, just really inspiring stories, and yeah, it was really really good.
Any cool
time.
Brands you heard speak?
Yeah, I mean, as people might know, I'm a huge fan of like Dirty Lemon and that whole thing, you know, simply because of the SMS text messaging. One of, like, the quick
loyal listeners know that well.
Yeah. I talk about it a lot. What's interesting is that they're actually taking most money out of their paid ads. So they're a lot of their success comes from paid social ads. They're taking a lot of it and they're putting it into physical retail stores.
Yeah, did you guys see that space?
Yeah, I didn't see this space, unfortunately.
Okay.
But they have three now with a lot more on the way, and they found that actually investing into store footprints and storefronts is showing to have a bigger effect on sales within that area than actually spending an equivalent amount of money on social advertising, which was a huge, I think, realization, not only for them, but I heard that a couple different times from the brands that were there. So I think that was a huge, huge thing.
Interesting. Yeah, the energy overall last week was just incredible.
Oh,
it was
great.
Higher than I've
ever
seen it in the number of years I've been at the show. And what was your favorite highlight?
Probably our travels to the Glossier Mecca showroom.
Oh, the Glossier flagship.
Chris and I did make it to the flagship.
Yeah, describe that for the listeners. I forgot about that.
It
was
impressive.
A cool experience.
I mean, I had pretty high expectations, but I thought that it was really well done. We heard that it was impossible to try to get in there, that there were lines out the door. Obviously, everybody in town for NRF wanting to catch a glimpse of the flagship, but it was beautiful. You know, you go up the staircase. It's all this beautiful sandstone pink color. We had a really great time because there weren't a lot of people there. We went right before it closed. And so we had a lot of hands-on help from several people there. Got my boy brow.
Nice.
It came down in a little bag, you know, from a little pulley system down and dropped and delivered to me
That's amazing.
We left with my name on it. And we walked out.
That was my favorite part. I mean, it's basically set up like a micro warehouse. Like any of the products you want to take away from the store, come down on a conveyor belt.
You didn't like trying on the boy brow?
No, I didn't really go there, but but it was a cool experience. It was so beautiful, and where it is in New York is amazing. So.
The one thing I will say about store visits is interesting with the NRF crowd. It was fascinating to try to delineate between who was there for NRF and who was a real shopper.
Right.
And so you're always trying to think of, well, would this store normally be busy on a Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock? And usually it's a bunch of people in sport coats and you know, formal dress. Like, hey, wouldn't be here.
Yeah. The 30,000-40,000 people that descended on New York. Yeah. For me, it was exciting. We got to do a ton of great content. I think just to highlight like that, if you haven't seen it, for those listening, we did a number of great podcasts. We had Social Sign-In, Zip-In, one of the Checkout Free companies, Sezzle, Work Area.
Yep.
We also had a cool panel where we talked with IMS and Footmarks and Remy Control and even Forge. That was the one that really, for me, Forge, which is changing the way people work,
right,
allowing, you know, companies to kind of pool their labor force together, whether it be in malls or other parts of the country. I thought there was some really exciting content that we got to do, which I love doing that because you get to meet with the entrepreneurs and they're so passionate and excited about
it. Yeah,
so.
Lots of cool young startups, which you wrote about in the Forbes article, of kind of recapping the show in general, but it was impressive.
Yeah, keep your eye on Stacy Ferreira. So she's from the hood. She's from Phoenix, and actually technically Scottsdale, but she and I went to the same high school for a period of time.
Not at the same time. Much older than her.
So
this is a bit of a stretch.
Point of clarification.
Thank you for keeping me honest, everyone.
Yes.
All right. Well, you guys ready to get to it? Should we get to the Fast Five?
Let's break it
down in our signature style. All right. I'll take the first story. So this one's cool. This week, Target, Taco Bell, and Hy-Vee announced that they'll begin to take mobile payment in all locations, within the next couple of weeks. Target will now take Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, Google Pay, as well as all contactless MasterCard, Visa, American Express, and Discover cards. In addition to Target, Apple announced that other retailers will now be accepting Apple Pay as well. That includes 7,000 Taco Bell stores, 275 Hy-Vee grocery stores, 2,200 Jack in the Box stores, and my favorite, 3,000 Speedway convenience stores, which means that now 74 of the 100 major retailers accept Apple Pay, and that 65% of the nation's retailers accept it as well. This indicates that there's a higher adoption of mobile payments spreading quickly nationwide. Interesting, according to USA Today, there are some companies that are still late on the bandwagon. Those companies are Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot, and Kroger. They have not moved forward with Apple Pay. And I think this is interesting. It raises the question, I'm curious what you guys think about this, but why haven't more retailers moved to support tokenized payments, especially as a way to avoid security breaches? Is it that they want your 16-digit credit card number so badly that they risk the security aspect? I think it's worth thinking about. I mean, it's interesting. When you think about it, signing up for Apple Pay is as simple as putting the PayPal button on your e-commerce website, and yet we haven't seen it universally adopted. And quite frankly, it's probably my favorite thing from a technology perspective that I've seen in terms of enhancing the experience at checkout in a very easy way. What do you guys think?
I think it's easy to say finally, right?
Right.
I think it's an easy thing to jump to.
I'm so surprised how many people don't use it in general.
Yeah, you know, and I have a couple points. I think to your question, why haven't other retailers? I think they're holding out hope that they are going to be able to own the payment system. You know, similar to the Starbucks app and similar to Starbucks, you know, though they accept Apple Pay there as well.
Right.
A large percentage of actual transactions happen on the Starbucks app, which eliminate the 3% purchase. And we've talked about that on a podcast before. And I think some retailers think that they might be able to take a grip of that or take away that 3% and just take it away altogether. So why continue to dig yourself a deeper hole? I will say,
but even to that point, Carter, I think my favorite app right now is Chick-fil-A's app.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you can use Apple Pay within that.
Sure,
it's super
totally
simple.
Yeah, exactly. I will say that if you rewind, and I can't tell you the exact years, to when Apple Pay was first coming out, as Apple employees, we actually were mandated to set that up with every new phone and ask every person who was checking out if they'd like to use Apple Pay. And reading between the lines, we thought that it was because adoption was so minimal, is so small. And I think that was the truth. And people weren't using it. They weren't understanding how to set it up. It wasn't part of their daily routine, et cetera, et cetera. And I think you're starting to see more stores come into this mix, or retailers come into this mix, but are people using it? And I think they are more and more, especially with chips taking a long time.
Oh, taking
right?
forever. Yeah.
I just think it's interesting. You know, even though it's being accepted, are people going to start using it? I think the answer is yes. But at what clip?
Yeah, and where do you come on this? Well, this is one of our how millennial are you questions. I'm always surprised by how many people still say they use credit cards.
You know, I think when you take a look at who's not using it yet, and Walmart being the biggest the biggest retailer resisting it,
holding out.
I think you have to still consider, especially legacy retailers, how they're thinking about cash transactions and eliminating cash. And this is moving towards eliminating cash. And if you look at middle America again, I think a big problem with technology that all of us are guilty of is, you know, not thinking about the fact that a lot of people still need to pay cash for things. They don't have mobile phones that have Apple Pay enabled. They're not even on an iOS device, most likely. And so I think it's being, you know, getting rid of cash can kind of be a big step for a retailer to get over. And so I think it's something that I'm not surprised when I hear that Walmart's kind of towing into the water or testing their own system still.
But even that makes, like, in a lot of ways, like, yeah, you hear that, but like kind of makes doesn't make any sense because it's an add-on service, right? You can still pay with cash. It's just if you choose to use it, you can use it.
You can, but I think just in my experience, understanding what even kind of moving a test out of accepting cash is a huge hurdle to get over.
Right.
And all of the things that go with accepting, I mean, it's a big deal for retailers, and so I think that that's something that is back of mind, I guess, for me when I look at who those people are that haven't accepted it yet.
For sure. I think the other point, then we'll move on to topic number two, is I think retailers don't really understand how much of a competitive advantage there is in offering this solution, too. Because as a parent of two toddlers, I will literally choose which store to go to based on who has Apple Pay
A
capability. You will, too?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure, Carter, you're the same way.
Especially if you're like, depending on how you're commuting there too. Like if I'm bike commuting, which I do a lot during the summer, I will only go to certain grocery stores, liquor stores, whatever it is,
right,
that I'm going to pick up on the way because I can use Apple Pay.
Right.
And I don't have to bring all my
stuff. Wife never brings her wallet either. And so like that's how she chooses
that. So there's
too.
The hook. It's can you just bring your phone? And
right,
I think that's for me a more applicable thing of like, if I don't have to bring my wallet somewhere, I'll walk up to Lund's and use Apple Pay there. Apple Pay Cash and Venmo, and that's a whole other thing we can talk about another day.
We'll save that.
But they're continuing to push. I mean, Apple just like launched, I think, 4 15-second ads all about Apple Pay Cash, which is a super cool product. But just as a perspective of one, I don't think it's being used nearly as much as I thought it would.
Yeah, and I actually use that a lot. We've actually started using Apple Pay's function for cash too. It's pretty impressive. All right, and story number two.
All right, number
two. This is a fun one.
So Brandless announced this week that they are launching baby and pet products on their site. So they've also, with this addition, moved away from their $3 site-wide price point. They'll be carrying baby products like premium diapers, organic baby food, cruelty-free baby care personal products, wipes, lotion, shampoo, etc. Pet products will be things like protein treats, supplement chews, non-toxic toys, etc., etc. And while 90% of the products on the site will still remain at the $3 or less price point, the rest of those items, not $3 or less, will be $9.
Mm.
So one other point of note, they recently introduced a subscription box program, which has a $36 minimum and refills monthly. So, you know, we'll talk about my thoughts on that here in a minute. But
yeah, I can't wait. I'm jumping at the bit on this one.
So number one, I think they're not alone in doing this. We're seeing companies like Thrive Market also expanding beyond their original kind of core assortment as a way to capture more basket. And especially these direct-to-consumer brands are trying to do things like the monthly subscriptions to get loyalty because, you know, the research over Brandless over the course of the last year has shown that, you know, it's hard to maintain that monthly consumer. People will kind of use it sparingly here and there, but really trying to retain that customer has been a challenge for them. So, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this new.
Carter, you have to go first because
I was just going to unleash you. You know, I will yield my time.
You're going to yield
to Chris. Yes.
Okay,
I'll just go.
Here we go. I hate to say it, but we predicted this. Like my favorite infomercial or AKA direct to consumer Trader Joe's. We said it. I said the $3 price point isn't going to work. Like e-commerce, you can't run a sustainable business on this. Oh, so lo and behold, what do they do next? Well, they increase a price point and they add new product categories. Shocking. Oh, and now we're going to try to get a subscription service to help people pay for the economics of the business that we're doing. It almost feels kind of like what's been happening with meal kits over the last few years.
Mm.
Now, other companies, like you said, Thrive Market are doing this, but Thrive Market's approaches from a different angle altogether. They've always been about a complete rounded assortment and not just their own brands, but other people's brands entirely. So I think that's a completely different thing. So if anything, this worries the hell out of me because it makes me curious about what is the sustainability and stability of the business model overall.
Right. Well, they're trying new things, right? But Carter, if I can give you one piece of advice as a soon-to-be parent.
Yeah, you have to talk about the diapers.
There's one thing you don't ever want to run out of, and that is diapers.
What do you do when you run out of diapers?
I mean, how many diapers do you get for $9?
So FYI, $9 gets you 23 diapers. Now, mind you, that's on a monthly subscription. You can order them individually, but then you're paying shipping for those. So
nightmare.
If you want to, you can, I mean, for me, I don't understand, first of all, how this has to be so complicated too. Like, why do the diapers have to be $9? Why don't you just give me all the diapers, but give me the, and technically if I order 4 sets of diapers, then I can, you know, one for each week, one package of their diapers for $9 will last you 1 week. I could get a full subscription box for $36 a month, but now it's like overcomplicated things. And I think they're going to end up sending more people to Target or places that they are, you know, going to have to refill and replenish because they don't have enough products.
Well, and I think that's a $64,000 question, right? Like, what is the end game here? To me, the only out here is you either become a CPG company and you start putting this product on shelf. But those price points, once you get on shelf in store, are going to look really out of whack compared to everything else. So yeah. I don't see how that works, and I don't see how you hold to that. And then second, you could build your own stores, but then you're kind of doing what someone already does already. I make the joke about Trader Joe's, but it's already being done.
Yeah,
and then you could be Target, but also, by the way, they already have all their own private brands, and it's already being done. And Kroger's doing it too. So I don't really get this. I don't see how it plays out in the long run. Is that a good venting diatribe there, Carter?
Big brandless guy, Chris.
All right, let's go on to number three.
Big fan of brandless. All right, I'll take it from here. Not like you need any more caffeine here, but Starbucks expands its delivery services to 6 more U.S. cities, starting with San Francisco. That's right. Starbucks, 30-minute delivery for coffees, is expanding into a couple new cities. That's Boston, Chicago, L.A., New York, and Washington, D.C. They started this in 2018 with 2,000 Alibaba stores in China. So that was kind of the first start. And 95% of the Starbucks menu is available to consumers who order through the Uber Eats app, and delivery is only $2.49. I say only because that's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
That's Starbucks, worth it. It's basically what I take from that.
I was just going
to
say.
Especially in the next 3 months, Carter, to have Starbucks delivered to your house with a newborn.
I have a Starbucks like 2 blocks away, and easy. No. And they're planning on rolling it to 2,000 cities nationwide, as their plans are to also go over to Europe with a London kind of branch as well. So I already kind of said what I think, but for $2.49, like, to get a Starbucks delivered, and if you think about it,
especially for the whole family too,
for the whole family, and I think even for a single cup, like, I'm a pretty cheap coffee person, but I do really enjoy a cup of Starbucks coffee, and if you're already paying $2.50 for a grande light roast pike or whatever for $5 and have it just delivered to you, easy. I think that's awesome. Now, being a person who hasn't tried it before, I'm super curious how it's delivered, like.
And quality control too.
Quality control. Yeah. And leave it to Starbucks though, I think, to figure out a really good solution to
this.
That's
a good point.
But I doubt it is it can't be the cup and a stopper. There's no way that can be a thing. There's gotta be a better way.
Yeah, I think of the movie Waiters or whatever. Do you ever see that movie? Like, all the things that happen to your food back in, between Starbucks and your house, that worries me, but
well, they said that they're doing things like they're brewing the coffee at higher temperatures. I mean, they've really dialed this in. I think the biggest takeaway from this is that they've been doing this with 2,000, locations in China.
Yeah, it's
and
working.
We're seeing
it's,
yeah, if you
they've,
can make that
they've
work.
Dialed it in. They've experimented in that environment. And I think it's just another sign of these amazing things that are happening. We saw it at NRF with the other things that Alibaba is doing with Fresh Hippo and some of their other concepts. Like, this stuff is coming, and so I think that's really exciting to me to start to see this start to come into the U.S. market.
Well, it's like a year ago, I think, I wrote a post about the Alibaba one, and I think
we talked about it on the show.
Yeah.
That's why I love doing the show. It's
totally.
You see the things we were talking about 8 months ago that are coming to fruition in the States.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what's interesting is I'd be curious what you think of having Starbucks has built their footprints trying their best, and forgive me if this quote's wrong, but it's that you never have to go out of your way, right? So they'll put one on every side of the freeway exit so you don't have to turn left. Mm-hmm. And they've done that. And so I'm curious how having a storefront within seconds of large portions of people, especially in cities, has an effect positively or negatively in terms of on delivery. Now, positive is easy. It's a quick little turn. But the negative side potentially, and I'm just trying to be the devil's advocate here, is you have to get a delivery driver to drive something 2 blocks. Like, it doesn't seem like a very efficient route for that person, especially when there's these time limits. So I'd just be curious what you think about that whole thing.
Well, I think you bring up some interesting points on things you've talked about before, and also it depends on how many cups of coffee they're picking up along their route, right? And what you made me think of that we didn't really bring up in the last few minutes is you always talk about who owns what time in the day. And Starbucks does a really good job of owning specific parts, but there are probably untapped opportunities of other times of the day or other days of the week that they're not in right
it's
now.
So valid.
And so anytime.
Look at Starbucks happy hour. They're trying to get people to come back.
Exactly.
Remember that whole thing? It's like no one comes back after 9 o'clock in the morning. So come back at 2 or we're still here.
Exactly. So I think regardless, it's worth the experimentation, because if it works, you've suddenly tapped into something, that gives people just more awareness about what you do, makes you more attached to the brand. I wish more brands took that type of approach, which is in the ethos of the types of things that you talk about a lot.
Well, I think you look at logistics too. I mean, it really comes down to these Uber Eats drivers aren't just delivering Starbucks either. So it's how do you improve the technology to improve the routes and the number of deliveries and drop-offs they're able to make?
Here's a question. If they figure out that you know, realistically, you're only buying, you know, cups of Pike. Like, why wouldn't they just have a huge thermos of Pike in the back and they're actually
autonomous vehicles?
Well, they're just pouring the
might
cup.
Be
in
how
there.
They're doing it. Right. Who knows? We don't know. Right. It's going to be fun to watch.
The delivery driver's at the door. We got
to
go.
All right. Let's get to story number four because Walmart has to make the news. So
yes, of course. So OmniTalk listeners, get your resumes ready, cleaned up, because Walmart store number 8 is looking for a new CEO, and it could be you, to lead their new startup at Stealth Company. In quotes. But according to a job posting,
John Travolta wasn't available.
No. On the Walmart site, they're looking for somebody to lead a tech-focused startup out of their, again, their store number 8 concept. The previous initiatives to come out of store number 8 are things that we've talked about at length on this show, Jet Black, other things we haven't talked about, or I'm curious how many listeners actually know what this is either, but Spatial Land, a VR software company that has come out of store number 8, and some other things, Project Kepler, rumored to be a competition for Walmart with Amazon Go stores, et cetera. Curious, Carter, Chris, what do you guys think this new
Johnny,
project
you have
is?
To go first on this
I was like, that's the worst name ever. That's such a Walmart name.
Which
remember Jet Black? Right? Wasn't that the name of the...
I thought you didn't want to get Chris going.
You tried to ramp me up.
I'm just poking the bear a little bit.
This makes no sense. Like, I have been on the diatribe on this, too. Like, come on, Walmart. You're in the PR news every day. This isn't even news. And I also, like, why are we talking about this?
It's on the top of the page of every single retail, website right now, because they've been able to hack their way into this in, I would argue, an incredibly lame way.
Who does this? What company does this? Like, ooh, we have this super cool idea. Let's tell everyone that it's a super cool idea and try to find a CEO randomly, through all this media.
But maybe it's a fact that they understand how shallow it is. Like, they don't, maybe they had this crazy idea that someone wrote on a whiteboard one day, but don't actually know how to make it happen. So, like, well, we'll just suck all the PR juice out of it and see what happens.
They are a PR machine.
Let me go off this too. Store number 8 is now over a year and a half old. Okay. And you rattled off what it's doing, or at least what we know it's doing. Jet Black, we've talked about this. We haven't heard crap about Jet Black
in over six months.
And I just wrote a pretty scathing piece on it, and no one's come out and said, oh, it's really working well, here's how good it is, and what we're planning to do with it. Spatial Land, a VR company? Okay, join the club. I was at NRF last week. There's 400 other VR things out there in the world. By the way, VR is not going to revolutionize Walmart stores. I can do that at home. And then Project Kepler and Franklin, okay, cool. Those have cool names, Kepler. I get it. You're trying to sound cool. What the hell are those? I have no idea what's coming out of this thing, and it's 2 years old. Okay, rant done. At some point, you have to pay off these investments. And I get it that it's a 10-year horizon, but come on. Let's talk about stories that are real. Can we start talking about things that are actually making a difference? At some point, you got to start showing that. And to me, the threshold on that, I'll give you another maybe year or 2 years, 4 years at best. But anything beyond that, if you go beyond that without showing results, you're going to be in trouble. In my book, you're in trouble.
Here's my question for people at the table who have some great experience in this world. Why Walmart's not doing anything great. Their grocery delivery stuff we talk a lot about, and that being successful, and some of the Walmart Pay stuff. And is that just not quote-unquote innovative enough to have underneath that umbrella of store number 8?
Yeah, it doesn't fall into that. This is their – its own store number 8 is really kind of their incubation arm. In a lot of ways, it's almost their own internal VC fund. Mm-hmm. Where they run these businesses autonomously.
Got it. So nothing that, okay,
operation.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the idea is it should help inform Walmart over time. I have questions about if it's really set up to do that or if some of these things are so far afield. But, yeah, time will tell.
Yeah.
All right, after that one, I can see the faces on my compatriots here. But man, I had to get that one off my chest because I saw that this week and I was like, come on, guys. But anyway, last one is actually a story that's near and dear to my heart. So the fifth topic this week is actually, it was announced that Mickey Drexler is stepping down as chairman of J.Crew. The former CEO and chairman, Drexler, will be leaving to focus on personal ventures, and he will still keep his board positions at Warby Parker and Outdoor Voices, and he will still also have an advisory role to the board. Now, from my perspective, I just want to pay homage to Mr. Drexler. So I fortunately was able to work with him, not really with him, but he was at the Gap, reading the Gap when I was there.
Is this kind of like how you went to high school with Stacey Ferreira?
Not the same time. We saw each other once in the hallway.
No, but I did. I tell you what, he was very visible. I was there from 1999 to 2003. I can't remember when he left, but he was there at least for the first couple years, and he was always really visible. And I learned a lot of things from him. you know, I've written some tough things about him, but at the end of the day, the guy is a genius. He deserves the moniker Merchant Prince for what he's done at The Gap, what he's done at J. Crew. But to give you guys some personal anecdotes, I mean, I can remember him walking the floor every morning and stopping and talking to me and other people that were 22, 23 and really grilling us and asking us about our business. And so I learned right then and there, you know, how to be a professional. Like, you had to be on your stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time, my favorite story, I was fortunate enough to actually pitch him an idea once. I had a meeting where I got a call from his assistant. He said, come on in. Mickey wants to talk to you about the work you've been working on. And I was working on a project about what was the optimal number of sizes for men's denim pants, believe it or not.
Nice.
And so he comes in.
Thankless work.
Yeah. So I come in, he sit down in his office, this beautiful office. He's like, I hear you've been working on some good stuff. What is it? And so I tell him real quick. And he goes, I said, I think you should eliminate some sizes in your denim. He goes, why should I do that? And I go, because you only sell like one or two per store a week. And he goes, in an average store. He's like, okay, done. We're doing it. And I came out of there and then I left. And I was like, oh my God, man, this guy makes things happen. This guy moves on decisions. He moves on intuition. And that's the part for me that I think, as we think about the blend of e-commerce and stores, retail still fundamentally, as much data as you want to put into it, there still is an intuitive piece of how you design experiences and products that'll never go away. And quite frankly, in my experience, Mickey, if you're listening, you're the best I've ever seen at doing that.
Yeah, I think he's going to be positioned well now to really focus the time that he does want to dedicate to still being a part of retail experiences on the boards at Outdoor Voices and Warby Parker. I mean, you can tell from both of those stores and experiences that, and from just talking to the associates in those places who've worked with him, that he's had an impact on those becoming really successful big brands.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be curious too, how does this affect J. Crew? I mean, you speak super highly of him and being able to do that, and obviously they're not in the best of days. And I think I'd be curious how this affects them. Is it good, even though he was an incredible leader from the sounds of it? Do they need new people in to try new things? Or how do you think that affects that organization?
Yeah, and that's always where I get a little critical of Mickey, because I do think, you know, in some of the recent statements, it isn't about the product inside your walls anymore, right? You can just get those so sure. easily online. You have to. So you actually need people that are more experienced in total experience design, which means you have to have a very strong digital acumen to bring both digital outside the store and into the store in a way that is really frictionless, similar to what you've done at Warby. I mean,
Warby's
probably best in class. So you need someone that can do that. And what I worry about is that J. Crew has been kind of bred where product is king, traditional product, like the clothes that you put in the store.
Sure.
Because that's what Mickey was really good at. And, you know, and they've made some missteps. Like, the CEO they brought in was gone in a matter of minutes, right? And they've mm-hmm. changed some of their strategies. Like, their mercantile line already right. has been changed. And so, you know, what I worry about is the culture's probably ingrained that way. So you're going to really need somebody that can get in there and shake it up with that type of mindset. And quite frankly, I think that person is really hard to find.
Sure.
There's only so many people that meet that criteria at this point, given the experience that they have. So yeah. So again, thanks, Mickey, for everything you've taught me, and kudos. All right. Well, that closes us up for this week's Fast Five. A couple of key highlights. I actually am out in Miami, Florida this weekend with Anne. I am keynoting the Food Marketing Institute's Midwinter Conference, speaking on the future of retail. The title of the presentation is Back to the Future with New Retail. So I'm excited to talk to everyone out there. If you happen to be at that conference, please hit us up. Of course, as always, please subscribe to the blog and podcast by going to omnitalk.blog. And stay tuned next week. We have an awesome interview we're planning to release around visual search with a company called Sight. And of course, as always, on behalf of all of us, be careful out there.